This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher.
Well, hi, everyone. I hope your week is going well. Well, here at Bloomer Boomer, sometimes it seems like we devote maybe too much attention on retirement and how to plan for and enjoy it. But today, you know, we're looking at actually the complete opposite about unretiring. I mean, we joke at these big-time athletes who suddenly unretire, like super swimming Olympian Michael Phelps, who retired at 28, or unretired at 28, I should say. But seriously, we might be seeing more now from those of us over 55 who, for reasons as varied as you can imagine, want to, in fact, unretire. So to really find out whether there's truth to all of this, we talked with the CEO of a company called CIC Wealth Management. His name is Ryan Wibberly, to find out what really happens to retirement plans when people change their mind and decide to go back to work. Now, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. And even though we use a very young but now famous and presumably rich Michael Phelps as an example, he's not typical, but at least a starting point nonetheless.
I think his circumstances are probably a little different than the majority of my clients, being that he's so young. But I think it's the idea behind it's similar in that some people want to go back to work because they feel that they don't have enough going on in their lives, or they're bored, or they're or maybe some people have to go back because for financial reasons. Nevertheless, some people do want to go back to work.
And I suppose you hear all different reasons why people decide to unretire.
What I see the most, fortunately, I haven't seen anybody go back to work because they had to go back to work. So I guess that's a good thing. But what I have seen most consistently is that even people with substantial assets, retirement assets or otherwise, and a rock-solid financial plan, I often see that these folks sometimes feel that they still don't have enough money. And so there's this fear about spending money. And I think sometimes when they go back into the workforce, even if it's in a different capacity, maybe as a consultant or just part-time in an entirely different industry, you know, maybe that it is some sort of attempt to provide comfort for that concern about not having enough. Go ahead. Yeah, so I was going to say, so it hasn't been, they needed it, at least from my perspective, when I look at what they've got, how they spend, the financial plan that we've had in place, it all looks good to me, but yet they still, maybe they aren't convinced, or they just still feel that they're too scared to spend their money.
So we often hear that in retirement, one finds that they can only play so many rounds of golf and then start to get bored. And you're not seeing that motivation as much then?
Not as much. I mean, there's definitely some of that. But those folks tend to, what I've seen with that is they tend to get more involved in charity work. Which is a great, great option. And, you know, one of the conversations that I have is, whether or not it's actually worth entering the workforce again for pay versus doing pro bono work or some sort of charitable work and not get paid, because there are costs to going back to work, as we all know. So one of those conversations is, why are you going back to work? Is it because you're bored and you can't play enough rounds of golf to keep you interested? Or is it some other reason? Is it you want to get out of the house and you don't need the money? Or no, you think you need the money, and then if you do, then let's talk about, how much you need and how much it's going to cost you to get it.
Well, that's, I guess, in some respects, for those people, that's, in a way, that's a nice problem to have. But at the same time, where is this fear coming from that they're not going to have enough?
That's a great question. I don't know. It's typically what I see. It's typically the people who have the money who are most fearful. And the ones that don't have the money don't seem to be fearful at all. So where does that come from? I have no idea. But maybe the reason they have the money they have is because they've always lived in this fear of not having enough, and therefore they've been good savers and good spenders too. Whereas someone who maybe doesn't care quite as much didn't save as much and maybe spends a little bit more.
So, Ryan, someone comes in to you and they say, I want to unretire. I want to go back to work. What's the process from there on out?
So, right. So I guess in maybe, I don't want to say trying to convince them that they don't need to, but during the course of this conversation, when they talk about what their plans are and they're thinking of going back to work, and let's just say it's that example of the person who feels that they need the money, and the next step for us would be really to kind of pull that financial plan back out and go through the process of showing them how we feel that we've built in a strong cushion for their portfolio or for their financial plan to take some shocks, financial shocks or what have you, and that they would still be fine. Again, some of this may be emotional. Some of it may not be purely data-driven. So all of that may lead us nowhere, and they still may want to go back to work. So then the next step for me, what I like to do is, let's look at the pros and cons of returning to work and see, if this is going to answer your concerns, or is it going to create more concerns? So if you want, we can kind of run through what I think are the pros and the cons and then maybe dive into those topics a little more. Does that sound good?
Yeah, but that's great. I just had one other question in your previous thinking there. And what would it be that would create these fears? Now, are we talking about some major medical bills, or are we talking about a downturn in their investments? What kind of things are there that create that kind of fear?
I think that's age-driven. What I find is folks that are under the age of 65, healthcare is a big issue. We all know it's all over the place. It's in the news every day. And so, funding their own healthcare is, I think, one source. Now, once you're above the age of 65, then maybe it's not quite as much of a concern. I think folks over age 65, it's more, I think it's more just the fear of running out of money, and whether that comes from, maybe their parents didn't have enough, or somebody else that they know that they've watched, go through a bad situation, because, 2008 and 2009 wasn't that far ago, wasn't that long ago, and for someone who was in retirement, where even safe investments went down, I'm sure that rattled some people. So my guess is that it's a combination of things like that.
Okay, so then you were going to talk about, trying to bring a little bit of a rational discussion in here, and we're also assuming at this point that they've already decided they're going to work. Now it's just a matter of figuring how, or where are we at this discussion?
Right. So I think it's always good to go in with eyes wide open. So the obvious pros are you'll be earning a paycheck. This relieves pressure from your portfolio to generate current income. That's the obvious. Earning a paycheck may also provide for additional savings, also kind of obvious. But for someone under the age of 65, it may be healthcare driven. They may be paying for their own individual plan, and they'd love to get on some sort of group health plan. So that may be a positive for someone under the age of 65. If you return to your prior employer, maybe you worked for a big company and you go back to that company, and you're, say, later, after the age of 65, if you participate in that same employer's 401k, you can delay the distribution, you know, that required minimum distribution at 70.5. So that's a positive. And it also gives you the opportunity, should you take it, to postpone your Social Security benefits, which, you know, which would result in a higher amount in the future. So those are, to me, kind of the four big pros for going back to work. The cons, though, I think there are a lot of costs that we just don't consider. One is, it may require additional training, you know. So would there be some costs involved in getting prepared to go back into the workforce? Possibly. Of course, commuting costs, you know, cost of gasoline is high. So what's it going to cost you in terms of, you know, commuting? Dining out. Oftentimes, that turkey sandwich every day when you bring to work, it's boring, so you end up spending more money going out to lunch and doing those kinds of things. You might have to spend money on clothes. You might be pushed into a higher tax bracket. All of these things potentially are eating away at what you perceive as this additional income that you're going to be bringing home. The other thing is if you're not at your full retirement age, you have to be careful with your Social Security benefit if you've already decided to be, you know, start collecting. So if you go back to work and you've taken benefits early, your benefits will be reduced, you know, until you reach that full age of retirement. So again, that's one more cost that someone who may be looking at the day-to-day budget and not factor in the loss of some income there. So I kind of throw all those things out. And then, you know, when you really look at the budget and determine, well, how much are you really going to make here? How much is this going to cost you? And the net of it all, what's going to be left? And sometimes that may convince them not to do it. Or, hey, maybe it's somebody who's going to go back and be a consultant and make six figures. And, of course, that would be different. You know, we're talking about here people that are maybe wouldn't make nearly as much, and so the cost-benefit analysis doesn't quite line up.
So what we're hearing is that going back to work or unretiring may not be the best solution.
You know, or, hey, maybe you can actually cut back on some expenses, you know. That may not be an option, or maybe they don't want to do that. But it's something else to throw out there as a what-if. You know, maybe again, if we're talking about the people that are looking at this financially, maybe that'd be an option.
And two, retirement for anybody is a certainly a major milestone in life, and not one that most people are going to probably, well, some will take with ease, but many may not take particularly easily for a while because it takes time to get adjusted. So I suppose some of this this adjustment period could be talking here, too.
Well, I agree. This goes back to this fear of spending. Most of us, you know, as we grow up through our careers, we learn how to save. You know, we all have been taught, you know, you save into your 401k, you save into whatever your investments you have, you do it monthly, you dollar cost average in, you buy and hold. You know, the long run is going to really be your friend. Time's going to really be your friend with your investments. And, you know, we've experienced this growth, and maybe we did that for 30 years before we get to a point where now we have to actually teach ourselves how to spend our money instead of save it. And that may be a hard thing to learn for somebody that's just done something in the exact opposite for the last 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it sounds as though in your discussion you addressed this, but there is also the reality that their income sources may not be what they were when interest rates were better. So those would probably be some considerations as well.
Absolutely. That's a big one, too. You know, that's been going on, obviously, now for years. people trying to find get income off of their investments are having to go into places that maybe they're having to leave their comfort zone and going into investments. Maybe it's high yield bonds, or maybe it's, you know, dividend paying stocks, or maybe they're owning more dividend paying stocks than they might, you know, normally want to do because they're searching for some sort of yield or income off their investments. CDs and, you know, the typical investments that most people think of in retirement, as you know, are paying nothing. So, you add all this up, and, you know, it's easy to understand why people are fearful and would consider work. You know, the other thing is, too, is demographics. I mean, people are retiring a little earlier than maybe they did, you know, 50 years ago. We're also living longer, so maybe we feel better and we feel more productive if we're out doing something. And so there are all these things, you know, together, I think, play into this decision. You know, Michael Phelps, I don't know how old he is, but I think he's in his 30s. He clearly, you know, him going back to work seems to be an obvious. But for someone who's 55 or 60, you know, a little different, but they still may feel that they could be productive citizens. And I think that's all part of it.
Right. Well, as we wind down here, for someone who is at that, maybe that dilemma, if you will, and they're trying to decide what steps to take, what might you tell them would be the first things to start really looking at closely, and then where do they go from there?
Yeah. One of the first questions I ask for someone who's decided they're going to go back to work, but they're going to do something, one of the first things I ask is, how are you going to be compensated? Are you going to be a 1099 self-contract employee, or are you going to be a W-2? And the reason I ask that question is because the individual who can be classified as a self-employed individual can really sock away a lot of money in a tax-deferred investment called a solo 401k or a single 401k, and they can really sock away a lot of money on a pre-tax basis. That W-2 employee is always subject to whatever their employer offers them. So if they have the option to be a self-employed individual and socking away a lot of money into a, you know, tax-deferred investment would be attractive, well, certainly something I would consider doing. The other is, if you're currently collecting a pension from a company and you're thinking about returning to work to that same company, you want to confirm that your returning to work is not going to impact your pension checks, because this doesn't impact everybody, but some plans require that if you come back to work that the pension benefits are suspended. So that'd be something I'd want to know. Another thing to think about is if you're currently collecting Social Security at a reduced rate, meaning you took benefits before your full retirement age, you know, you have an option within a window of time to pay back Social Security and give them all the money back that they've given you and defer your payments into the future. So if you retired at 62 and you took your Social Security, and then at 63 you decided, hey, I want to go back to work, you could pay back the last 12 months of your benefit, defer into the future, and get that much higher value later on. So that might be a good investment to make into your later years. The other is, if this doesn't happen for most people anymore, but if you're receiving retiree health benefits and you enter a company that has health insurance and you think maybe their plan looks better, you know, think long and hard before you give up your retiree health benefits, because chances are if you leave the plan, you may not be able to get back in. So that's something that's that's a rarity that they even have that anymore. But if you're lucky enough to have it, I'd be careful not to give that up. And then one last thing is, I think, and this is, you know, most people may not think of this, but I think you have the opportunity, depending on how long you plan to work, you have the opportunity to maybe rethink your investments. We at CIC, we employ a pretty disciplined income distribution model that we create, and it's really based upon how the money, how do you allocate your assets, okay? And you would and what we'll do is we'll set up a series of different buckets of money, if you will, that would be tied to, you know, certain number of years in retirement. And certainly the years 1 through 5, let's say, would be in very safe investments and so on. And this is where the client is living or drawing down off of that money. If you all of a sudden now had an income, you don't need quite as much money in that bucket. So you could rethink your investments a little bit, maybe be a little bit more aggressive with some of your money and invest more for the long run. If you're only going to go back to work for a year or two, then it probably wouldn't make that much of a difference. But it's something to think about, and it's certainly something we would look at, you know, depending on the client's plan and what, you know, how they saw their new income endeavor.
So I guess you have to put all the facts and figures together and then evaluate your emotional level of preparedness and decide from there.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and the best advice anybody could give someone like this is, you know, do something you love, and it won't feel like work. So it could still be retirement, but it won't feel like you're back to work if you're doing something you love.
And Ryan, before we let you go, just tell us what you do.
I'm the CEO and chairman of CIC Wealth Management in Gaithersburg, Maryland. So we are financial advisors that we're working with individuals like the people we're talking about here. And we'll create financial plans for individuals, income distribution models, manage portfolios to, you know, help ensure that their retirement assets last for their life. But the biggest thing is holding client hands through decisions like this and try to educate them and give them as much information as they can to make informed decisions for themselves.
Well, I sure appreciate your time. It's one of those things that you don't hear too much about, except Michael Phelps, of course, and a lot of others who are a lot less of a newsmaker. But it sounds like a reality that that people do face is maybe having, desiring, or needing to go back and leaving retirement.
I agree.
Thanks so much for your time.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. And finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our newsletter. Thanks again.